You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, October 4th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, it's Casual Friday. Cliff Schechter will be with us to look back on this wonderful week of news. Also on the program today, mayoral candidate and political satirist Randy Credico will be joining us to make his case for the mayorality. He's also a longtime former director of the William Kunstler Racial Justice Group. And I think he ran for the Senate at one point, too. On the program today, day four of the shutdown. Republicans do not know why they're doing it now. But they do know someone's got to help them and get them a win. It's just unbelievable. John Bonner will not, under any circumstances, allow the country to default, except for the fact that he's got to get something in return for not allowing the country to default. We're also day four of the Obamacare rollout. Looks like our own Kyle Shank should have been the one to design the national website. Nevertheless, they've almost got as many hits as we've had downloads this week. Our system's still up and running. And just a horrible story of a parent who lost her kid because her husband is using medical marijuana. Yeah. We will talk about that and more. Ladies and gentlemen, little housekeeping. The Podcast Awards nomination process is now live. You can go to podcastaward.com. Michael has put it on the site to link to it.
Are you saying that sarcastically, like as a check, or have you actually seen that indeed I did put it on the site this morning?
I wouldn't characterize what I was saying as sarcastic, but no, I have not checked to see that you did it. So you can go.
That was another way of using the show as a cudgel.
Yes. So, folks, you can go nominate us. Voting doesn't open for a while, but nominate us. You can only nominate us once, but you can vote many times. We're looking for nominations, as I'm sure it says in the post that Michael put up there, for news and politics and people's choice, Michael.
So not entertainment.
No, and nothing entertaining about this program.
Right.
We also have good news. I mentioned this briefly yesterday. But for the month of October and, I believe, beyond, for a couple of months, but for now, the month of October, Credo Mobile is a paid sponsor of the Majority Report. We've had this sponsorship before. You know Credo Mobile fights hard to enact progressive change and defeat regressive policies. They are not wedded to the establishment, folks. They are willing to make enemies in pursuit of progressive policies. They fight through the Credo Action Network. There's more than 3 million activists who have signed up to be part of that network. They fight for Medicare, marriage equality. They are fighting against Keystone XL. We've spoken to, I think, to Becky Bond in the past, where Credo Action members have pledged massive amounts of civil disobedience upon the State Department's recommendation when that comes out soon, I believe. They fight against Wall Street crime. They have raised $75 million since 1985 for progressive nonprofit groups like the Rainforest Action Network, Democracy Now!, the ACLU. Credo is the largest corporate donor to Planned Parenthood with more than $2 million in donations over the years. Credo Mobile revenues help fuel its activism and their nonprofit donations. So you could join Credo Mobile. The more progressives who join Credo Mobile, the harder it can fight and the more it can contribute to progressive nonprofits. Credo's giving listeners of the Majority Report a great deal, up to $350 credit to switch over to Credo so you can get out of your existing contract, and 25% off of all data costs over the next 2 years, which means you can use your new Majority Report app on their Android platform and not have to worry about data charges ever. Well, at least for the next 2 years. Sign up today for Credo Mobile service. Go to credomobile.com, CREDOMOBILE.com/Sam, ladies and gentlemen. And we also have a link, obviously, at majority.fm. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It's Casual Friday, folks. You know what that means, Cliff Schechter. But you know what it means when we have Cliff Schechter. It means the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you, my friend?
I am also doing well. I have weathered the storm of my wife being out of town for 3 days this week, which meant I was up all night with Saul, feeding him, trying to zhuzh him back to sleep.
Did it work?
Sometimes. He's still alive. He still seems to be moderately happy. And so,
he survived the evening. That's a good
start. We have all made it through this weakest horriblest. But the weakest horriblest still continues. We have a government shutdown. The Republicans now, ostensibly they shut the government down because they didn't like Obamacare. And now they're just shutting it down because they got to get something out of it. I mean, they've gone all through the trouble of not voting and preventing, frankly, a vote in the House to continue the functioning of the government. And so now they got to get something for it. I don't know, they want a cookie. Maybe President Obama should head down to the Congress and hand everybody like a little gold star and tape it right to their forehead.
That would help. Nice little toys, right?
Yeah.
Make them happy. Make them happy. Binders full of women to go through.
Maybe we could get, maybe we could just sort of like, they would like some type of like bloodletting of poor people, maybe on the house on the floor of Congress. Louis Gohmert can be there and do some type of ceremony where he sacrifices an unemployed person.
All the firstborn minority unemployed children.
There you go.
I could see that would help Gohmert grow back some hair in his head. He'd get so excited.
Maybe that will be it. I mean, this is just stunning. I mean, it really, in many respects, it just comes down to your buddy John Bonaire wanting to retain his speakership, because there's votes in the Senate. I mean, the House.
20 different, maybe more now. I saw 20 different Republicans. The moderate wing, which is the wing that only half goose steps of the Republican Party. They want to now, they've said, 20 of them have said they would vote for a clean continuing resolution, meaning nothing to do with defunding Obamacare. Meaning, yes, the votes are there because I can't see more than two or three dunderheads in the Democratic caucus breaking away. You'd have it. But Boehner, I don't really know what's going on in Boehner's head. You know, he's got a solid tan. He's drunk. He likes some frickin' cigarettes. I don't really understand why he doesn't just do what the Chamber of Commerce wants, force a vote on this frickin' thing, and go become a corporate lobbyist for $1 million a year. What is he trying to hold on to here? More tanning time? Probably he'll go work somewhere where he can smoke indoors, take down so much Merlot, it'll be sprinkling out of him like he's a frickin' sprinkler in the backyard. He's all good.
It really is stunning. And, you know, I was on Chris Hayes' program last night with Ben Dominic. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
He's the guy that was like supposed to be hired by the
Washington Post,
but then he was strangely copying things that other people wrote.
No, I think what you're looking for is plagiarism. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they call it plagiarism. And he was doing that. So then the Washington Post said, our editorial board can only get away with that. We're not going to hire this guy.
And now I think he works for the Heartland Institute, which is...
Oh, those are those guys that put up the billboards that think global warming is just God sneezing on us, right?
Right, indeed. So this guy was on last night, and, you know, it was one of the few places that I've heard at least anybody say in the media, frankly, that there could be a vote today and start the government if they allowed this vote to take place. I mean, this isn't like the shutdowns of days gone by, where there simply wasn't enough votes to start the government back up. There could be a vote. So this really is just one guy deciding that his own position is far more relevant than people, and I've got a list here of stuff that, you know, going around the country, you've got 800,000 workers who are losing now a week of pay minimum. 800,000 furloughed federal workers around the country. And this includes National Guardsmen. This includes people working at state parks, I mean, national parks. I mean, this
right.
includes a whole mess of people, 800,000 who are going to lose, at the very least, 1 week of pay. That's around, what, 2%? Next week it's going to be 4%. I mean, these are not people who are making a lot of money. This is just stunning.
These Republicans in the House, the ones that they're just such – I really can't heap enough contempt on them. I would take really a really long time. They're all those people that you've met throughout your life that you've just thought to yourself, these are just the most terrible, sickening, horrible, they're just terrible people. I mean, probably most people have seen, you know, the video by now of Randy Hamburger, Newberger, whatever the hell his name is, from Texas, the guy showing up at the World War II Memorial and yelling at the park ranger that it was their fault it was closed, because he voted to shut down the government. That one's been going viral. So he screamed at somebody who's an innocent yep. person in this because he isn't. He's a jackass. Then I go and I start reading the quotes that are out there, and you gave a quote earlier from that idiot congressman from Indiana about that. Well, we don't know what we wanted. We've been disrespected.
Here it is. We're not going to be disrespected. We have to get something out of this. I don't know what that even is.
Right. I mean, that's just... it speaks for itself. And then we get Renee Elmers, Republican of North Carolina, getting an interview today. Republican, quote, I need my paycheck. That's the bottom line. I understand that there may be some other members who are deferring their paychecks, and I think that's admirable. I'm not in that position. Yeah, how about all the freaking people that you were just talking about, Sam, that are in that position, you
right.
imbecile? Every one of them should just smack her across the damn face. You know, I mean... I don't know how to describe it. I mean, I can't imagine if I were one of those people that, and then all these people, you know, can somebody, some smart listener to the show explain to me why members of Congress get paid during a shutdown they caused, but other people don't? I don't get it. I don't understand how that works. They shut the government down. So doesn't that include them? Are they in the government?
I don't know why they're not like the Capitol Police, why they're not like the other 1.2 million federal workers who are working without pay, supposedly will get back pay. We don't know whether those 800,000 furloughed workers will get back pay at all. I find it hard to believe that the Republicans will allow that. But even to the extent that they do have an opportunity to get back pay, you know, you're talking about people who are probably do not have huge savings. Very few Americans these days do. Their rent is due, and we're not even, you know, touching upon the people in the kids in Head Start who have been thrown out. We're not talking about those mothers of infants who cannot get subsidies to feed their infant babies. I mean, this is just.
You know, because these guys are so pro-life. I mean, they're such sickening. It's like we literally went for a grab bag of the dregs of our society, and that is who the Tea Party Caucus in Congress is made of. I mean, as I said, just all the most hypocritical, miserable, angry, resentful, stupid people you've come across in your life, and they've been granted seats in a body that actually makes decisions. It's just, it's unbelievable. I don't even care what your ideology is. It's like, this isn't a, you know, I mean, these people are paying themselves while they're taking away other people's money. It's just, it's unbelievable to me that anyone could support this.
Let's just going around the country. Charleston, West Virginia, fire protection for Yeager Airport could be threatened if the federal government shutdown lasts more than a week or so. We are now at close to a week or so. That's according to the Major General James Hoyer, Adjutant General of the West Virginia National Guard. Oregon National Guard hit by federal shutdown. Arkansas National Guard hit by shutdown. In Idaho, officials at the Craters of the Moon National Monument were not able to put any of their 16 staff employees who are now on furlough. They couldn't send them out to search for a 63-year-old woman who is missing Tuesday morning because U.S. law says they can't do any work that has not been allocated funding. And fortunately, I think by Wednesday or Thursday of this week, they were able to get some volunteers, but they couldn't go search for this woman who is presumably now probably dead.
And that's the thing. Like, you know, I'm glad you're talking about that because that's, you know, we talked about this last weekend. What I can't stand are that when, you know, we replace reality with euphemisms to clean it up and make it sound nice. Here's what they're doing. You know, I like it. I loved it when, what's his name? The independent former governor of Maine, Angus King, who caucuses with the Democrats, he's an independent, came out and said what the right-wing extremists are doing is committing murder by cutting people's health care, because he's somebody who, when he was young, Angus King, would have died if he didn't have health care. I'm trying to remember what, if it was cancer or something that was discovered, and it was only the fact that he had health care that he was able to get the treatments he needed. You know, I mean, we say this stuff and we say it, you know, if it's a dictator killing people in a foreign country, whatever, but let's just be honest here. They're killing people. They're starving people. They're maiming people. They're hurting people terribly. I mean, you know, let's just say what it is, right? They're taking food out of kids' mouths. They're women who are, you know, like a woman like this woman who disappears. They're allowing her to die. This is what's going on. This is the sort of logical extension of what these imbeciles believe. This is the country they want to live in. This is, you know, what gets their, you know, that makes them feel all manly in the morning is to wake up and hurt people. What do you call people like that?
Republicans?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the right synonym at this point. I would also go with psychopaths, lunatics.
It really has just become just a tremendous game for them there. I mean, we played that to audio of Rand Paul coming up to a hot-mic'd Mitch McConnell and said, you know, I really think we're winning this thing. I really think that we're going to win this thing. Because,
I don't know. Be careful how you use hot mic and Mitch McConnell.
I understand. there's just a tremendous delusion. Wired has a piece on the impact on biomedical research that's taken place across the country. And these scientists are just they're just beside themselves. I mean, here's one of the quotes. I don't think the public realizes the devastating impact that this has on scientific research. Scientific research is not like turning on and off an assembly line. Experiments are frequently long-term and complicated. They involve specific treatments and specific times. You can't just stop and restart it. You've probably just destroyed the experiment. You also can't necessarily recover. You can't begin an experiment all over again. If you do, you'll be set back months, if there's even time and personnel to do it. But often science moves rapidly. Times change, and you can't reinitiate the experiments. It's an enormous loss to scientific research, an enormous loss of time and personnel. And I have no doubt that the public doesn't know about this or understand this concept. I mean, that is a problem with our society, the notion of sort of investment, and that if you cannot see these direct results and that they don't impact you directly, they don't exist. But, you know, part of this is a function of the media just doing such a horrible job of this. I mean,
of course,
can you just, I mean, just for a moment, imagine the idea if the Democrats had gotten up there and said, okay, this isn't the reason that we shut down the government. Is no longer the reason we shut down the government. We just need something. We don't know what it is, but we need something. This is like this is a cry for help. And supposedly the president is supposed to come running with like a cookies wrapped in a sort of a very respectful wrapping paper or something. I mean, this is just bizarre. It's bizarre. And the idea that this isn't, that there isn't like a, you know, some type of crisis countdown graphics on every cable network at this point. You know, this, you know, morons have taken over the Capitol building or whatever it is. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. And it just, it just drives you nuts. And, you know, I mean, I run out of, again, I run out of adjectives to describe these people. But I mean, the media, as you point out, is an enormous part of the problem, of course, because, again, the whole sort of assault on government that's been going on full force since Reagan came in and told us how it was the problem and all of that, you know, it's the media's job to explain to people, as we know, facts and actually what the government does for them. To let them know about programs that exist so they understand them. And I don't let Obama off for his role in the fact that, you know, the marketing of Obamacare, which should have been marketed by its individual components and repeated again and again and again, has been terrible. But it doesn't change the fact that that the media, they don't exist anymore. They're worthless for the most part. I don't want to say every single media broadcast, but most of our major media, which used to be accepted by TV stations as a loss, because they were being granted these broadcasting licenses for free by the government. And it wasn't something that was just, what are your ratings and what are the profits? It was a service they provided for us. Of course, that's all now changed. Everything that the movie network predicted would happen has happened, and much worse. And, I mean, so people, they don't know what's up and down. A lot of people have no clue about this as well as many other things. And then so it's easy for these guys to demagogue in the abstract and talk about big government and this and that, particularly when the concept of big government has quite purposefully, first by Southern Democrats and other now conservatives who become Republicans, has been tied to, you're giving all of our stuff to black people, which they've done ever since the 50s and 60s. And so it was much easier to, of course, say government has to be bad because government's taking it away from the deserving white people like us. But it's even worse that people don't know what these – it's easier for people to think that, to believe the welfare queen story and all that garbage, because when they don't happen to know what the specifics are. And they don't, you know, and that's why when I love, you know, listening to dealing with libertarians, you know, who can't admit they drove on a road that was paved by the government today, and that some, that there was research and investment that created that internet thing they're using, and, you know, we go on and on, we waste our time here, because so much of it is so self-evident to anybody who, you know, has any self-awareness, frankly, and understands that so much of what we do, the government has had a role in. So they want to pretend that we're all like some caveman, you know, who's making it on our own. We're independent, as if that exists. And it just, it gets you so mad because, again, it's what leads some of these dumb people to have their dumb ideas and sit there and argue with you to the point where it's just, you know you're never going to get through them because they only believe what they've been hearing on Rush Limbaugh.
Let's talk about where this goes next. I mean, as far as I can tell, the reporting all seems to suggest that the Republicans are not going to, Boehner's not going to allow for a vote on the continuing resolution. And we should make the point now, okay, that the continuing resolution is a disaster from a progressive point of view. On arrival, even if this thing was to continue, you're still talking about a budget that is under $1 trillion. It is under almost $100 billion less than or $230 billion less than the original Obama budget. It is closer to the 2014 Ryan budget. And so to the extent that the Democrats have already capitulated, they've already capitulated. I mean, at one point they made the decision that we're not going to send back a continuing resolution from the Senate that includes rollbacks to the cuts to the sequester cuts. I guess they did that for messaging. They're doing a piss poor job, as far as I'm concerned, with even messaging that. But you know, so that those cuts got us nothing. Even from a political standpoint. And so you have the Republicans now who are talking about rolling this in into one omnibus package, I guess, or just doing a clean debt ceiling vote. And this where they could be going. I mean, it's very hard to know because the President Obama emboldened the Republicans in 2011. There are many of them who are convinced that he will cave. Frankly, you'd be irrational not to assume that's not on the agenda. And it's quite possible what we'll see is Boehner, you know, allow for a clean debt ceiling vote, have that go through, although he's whiff-waffling on that thing back and forth, and we would still have a government shutdown that would continue for at least a couple of weeks. And I don't know. I'm also very concerned, and I feel like this comes up as often as my eczema. You know, I think it's gone, and then all of a sudden it crops up again, and I'm itching my legs.
Did you say you had an enema?
Huh? No, my eczema.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
But no, the enema is at least regularly scheduled. The eczema just appears up. You know, you're hearing a lot of talk right now from the Republicans about reigniting the grand bargain. And
that seems to be their sort of escape hatch out of this thing. And smartly, groups like those I have and do work with, Social Security Works being one of them, but also the Alliance for Retired Americans, who I don't do any work with, Got together, did a human chain to stop chain CPI. I love the proactive nature of, you know, making sure that this isn't even a thought.
I'll tell you something.
Again, those of us in the, quote, professional left, you know, us effing retards, as Rahm Emanuel put it, the ones of us that were out there saying in 2011, well, we were saying these types of things long before that, but we're talking about 2011 right now, you can't negotiate with them on the debt ceiling, because if you do this, then they're going to assume you're going to negotiate with them on these things every time, and they're going to extract more. We, of course, were just naive, unlike those centrists who were so smart and down to earth. And so, of course, now nobody ever believes Obama will stand strong on anything. And the Republican side, they think he's going to cave. And so far, to his credit, he apparently had a meeting with McConnell and Boehner, where McConnell apparently snuck out the back door when nobody was looking. Don't go anywhere with that one either, Sam, because we could take that one long if we wanted to. At one point, Harry Bieber was like, where'd Mitch go? He's getting a chin implant somewhere, is my guess. We said that back then, and he didn't listen. It seems like right now he is. He does realize that that was at least that was after an election. The Republicans had won big, and they had more leverage then. But again, you know, the whole thing here is when you're dealing with people that have there are written rules and regulations, and there are unwritten norms by which democratic governments exist. This radical right faction, which is revolutionary, it is not conservative in any sort of normal definition of that word, has thrown aside all of those unwritten rules and all of those rules of behavior, from impeachment to government shutdowns over hissy right. fits. They are the ones who started it. People think back, you know, now that we've had so many of these recalls that used to only be about mass corruption. And even look, even the left has gotten in on it with Scott Walker, which in the end, I had no problem with, because if the Republicans are going to do it, we need to do it. But I don't think anyone should do it at all. I don't think it's good for a democracy. They, of course, began that with Gray Davis just because, you know, they didn't like him and economic times were bad. You know, they've all these kinds of rules. Obviously, what went down in the 2000 election goes without saying. And again, they've done these things. Abusing the hell out of the filibuster, something that was rarely even used before. And so, you know, when they're willing to do that, again, I wish that we lived in a world where if one side acted terribly, by taking the high road, you could win. But that's not the world we live in. I'm sorry, that just, it doesn't work that way. And so it's simple. The simple fact of the matter is that if you're dealing with people that are willing to do anything to win, to break every unwritten rule, and frankly some written ones, you've got to be willing to play that game too. And President Obama could, but he's never willing to go there. He could just have using the 14th Amendment or a minting a coin. I'm not debating with you over this. The Constitution puts the right, of handling our debts and paying our bills in my hands. So go screw yourselves. This is a creation of World War I, 1917 creation that came out of nowhere. It's not anywhere in the Constitution. It's up to me. Go jump off a cliff. No pun intended towards myself. And that's that. But, you know, that's what we need from him. And he doesn't seem to do that.
I mean, look, the bottom line is that President Obama's agenda in this is not to not cave. President Obama's agenda in this is to make sure that part of his legacy isn't the loss of the balance of powers. And so that I don't know if it was Greg Sargent's piece, I think from yesterday in the Washington Post, he has indicated that they will negotiate on process. In other words, if they can get to a situation where there is some form of that old Gephardt rule or whatever McConnell suggested last time around, where the president would have more authority over the debt ceiling, or that it would be part of the appropriations process, he will go forward. And we do see, you know, and my whole eczema preface was about this notion of the grand bargain coming back up. I think that it is incredibly encouraging to see these groups that are trying to protect Social Security get out there in front of this, and before this inertia starts to where, you know, where there's this becomes this panic somewhere in the administration and then spread to the Democratic caucus that we got to get out of this no matter what. If it costs some cuts to Social Security, we've got to do it in exchange for a statutory situation where the Congress can never use the debt ceiling as a hostage.
And I'll say quickly, you know, the people who are fighting this fight, this needs to be emulated by other parts of the left. That they, you know, I honestly, I will say this because I'm not, I've consulted for them. I am, and let me be very clear, people, I am not giving myself credit for this. I am, however, going to give my business partner, We Act Radio, who also is at Social Security Works, Alex Lawson, who I'm not sure if you've had on the show or not before, Sam, credit. He is such a brilliant strategist and is so smart about understanding the way negotiation works. And what people on people on our side don't understand is you see the right ever, you know, always moving the window, the Overton window, rightward. And making ridiculous demands.
We see it with the continuing resolution, and we're practically at the Ryan budget now.
Right. So you see that with the exactly. Well, so look at what Social Security Works is doing and saying, you know what, we're not going to ask for you to not cut Social Security. We're going to ask you to increase it. We're going to demand that you do it. We're going to have events that embarrass you. We're going to call you out, whether you're, you know, Simpson Bowles or frankly Barack Obama. We're going to run a major campaign on this, and so then the compromise position becomes no change.
Right.
And that's the way you do it, folks. That's the way you do it.
And frankly,
you don't sit there and argue for what you have now. You sit there and you argue for more.
Showing that there's political will against cuts of Social Security before it even becomes part of the conversation, although I'm sure it's part of the conversation, but before it becomes even sort of like publicly floated in any way, does a lot. I think it goes a long way to keep that from that initial test balloon. I want to go over, we just got a couple minutes here before we get to Randy Credico. We're running a little bit late today, but I want to go over, you know, the Republicans, though they seem to have abandoned this, at least the Republicans in Washington, I'm still getting emails from red states saying, we're winning. Obamacare is just about to be defunded. We've got to hold their fire to, you know, their feet to the fire. Click here to donate $15 to redstate.com, blah, blah, you know. And this, of course, is, you know, it's got the crazies like, oh, my God, we're just about to defund Obamacare. Oh, hallelujah.
For $15, buy
it's only
going to
take
Erickson.
Me $15, and I get, like, a mouse pad in return or something. I get an American flag mouse pad.
You, too, can have Eric Erickson's manly man juice. Just pay $15 to Red State. That's what Eric Erickson's going to be doing soon.
I want to read this story from Think Progress. Which I think, you know, is so telling in so many ways. Now, there's been a lot of reporting on the failure of the central, basically, website, e-commerce, you know, it's basically an e-commerce site in many respects, of the national government that is the centerpiece of Obamacare, from not being able to essentially withstand the demand. Now, it's October. Nobody, people have all the way until January for this open enrollment, and actually until March, frankly. But if you want it before January 1st, you got to sign up before January 1st. And then you get to March. So there's open enrollment. These things are going to be worked out. Hopefully they'll call Kyle Schenck. But that's not the point. The point is that there is incredible demand out there for people to get insurance coverage. I want to read this one story. It is so telling in so many different ways. And I think this is a story we're going to see repeated. It's both a story of the success of Obamacare, said with the understanding that, you know, I would like to see a single payer or some type of Medicare for all or buy-in or whatnot. But from Think Progress, Joshua Pittman is a 31-year-old self-employed videographer from Montgomery, Alabama, a libertarian Republican who voted for Ron Paul in 2012. You remember Ron Paul? If the guy doesn't have insurance, that's his.
He crashes his motorcycle.
He's SOL.
Leave him on the highway for the vultures.
SOL.
Vultures get hungry too, you know.
He believes that Senator Rand Paul is the future of the GOP. He sees Barack Obama's presidency as a failure, who hasn't lived up to the nation's expectations. On Tuesday morning, Pittman logged in to healthcare.gov, and after initial glitches and delays, it took me all day, really, he says with a laugh. It kicked me out, told me you have to try again, but I knew what I was getting into with so many people exploring it. Though he initially supported repealing the law, Pittman became curious about Obamacare in the days and weeks before it launched. For years, he had gone uninsured, thinking he'd be able to, quote, get over anything with a Band-Aid and a six-pack of beer. But
that was my theory for years, too.
A lead poisoning incident earlier this year shook his confidence and bank account. This is the classic way Republicans come to understand the value of public policy. Leading him with tens of thousands of dollars in medical bills. Quote, I was a healthy person, and it really depleted me financially, so it made me look at things a different way than I would before. I understood the importance of people being insured.
Well, the problem was, I think we should have advised him that the Cheerios and number two pencil breakfasts were just not good for him.
Right.
I've seen that
firsthand people hitting up the emergency room for free health care and then putting a burden on everyone else. That's not something I would want to do.
Like people who've been shot and stuff.
He did it though. But,
help me. No, I want free health care. I'm bleeding.
I don't know that he went to the emergency room. I have no idea. The guys, I would love to have dug in, but leave that aside for a moment. I want to take personal responsibility. By no means am I trying to get a government handout. It's not a free handout. You're paying for this health care, but it's making it more accessible to more people. You know what, dude? I got news for you. It is a government handout. It's a government subsidy. It's been subsidized in some fashion or another. It's been regulated, which is a cost to private property. Face it. Face it. You're taking a government handout just like every other American who lives in this country. That's the reality. You still want to live in this deluded world where somehow you are Jeremiah Johnson living in the woods and you just come down with the money that you've earned, et cetera, et cetera.
You're chewing your lead-filled pencils and living out there like a man. Listen, pal, all I can say to you is, You know what? You're driving on the roads. You're taking a handout. Your freaking house catches on fire. You're taking a handout. Maybe next time you get on an airplane, you can help navigate all the other airplanes to land while you're doing it so we can cut government there. Shut up.
Ask what he likes about Obamacare.
With the freaking government. So tired of this fairy tale. All these people are like the freaking kids from Lord of the Flies. That's what they're like. That's the world they live in.
Ask what he liked about Obamacare. Pittman highlighted its prohibition against denying coverage to people with pre-existing conditions. Why? Because he wouldn't be able to find coverage without it.
Right, of course. This is the same thing we always come up against. Rob Portman, stop the gays. Oh, wait, I've got a gay son. Gay marriage. My son deserves equality that everyone else has.
And
not your son.
Now, let me
your
say
son
this.
Didn't deserve that equality before because I couldn't see that far past my own circumstances to understand that because I'm an asshole.
And while I applaud the fact that this guy sees the Republicans as acting childish now, the notion that he continues to hang on to this idea that he is so self-sufficient, that he's just going to pay for insurance. Those exchanges have been set up by government. Those regulations have been instituted by government. Your free market would deny you and allow you to die of lead poisoning. It would come in. It would take every single dollar that you own. It would take your home. It would debilitate you. You wouldn't be able to function in this country. You would be lying on the street just like your buddy Ron Paul wanted
you to. Beyond everything you just said, Sam, that would be if a free market actually really could exist. That would be what would happen to you.
Right.
But it can't exist because when you take away regulation, of course, power becomes monopolized by the big players who then make sure that government's manipulated as they already have in many cases because of deregulation so that the spoils of everything flow to them so that defense industry gets bigger and so banks get more money and more subsidies and oil companies get subsidies. And guess what, dude? Not only is it a free market where you're left to die, it's a crony capitalist market where the money that could go to you to let you live is being given to some oil baron a-hole somewhere who's sitting there in front of his mansion in his big swimming pool getting fatter and dumber and tea partier while you're dying. I'm done.
Me too. So that's the story of one libertarian who still holds on to his Ayn Randian vision of the world, and not coincidentally, just like she did while she was on Social Security.
Cliff. They're all James Dean. They're all James Dean. They're all Easy Rider. All these guys, all these tough guys, you know, they can't tell the difference between movies and reality. They're all taking care of themselves. You know what I'm saying?
Jeremiah Johnson. I don't know if anybody gets that reference. That was that Robert Redford movie, I think, where he moved up into the woods.
Let me move further into the 80s, then. They're all Bruce Willis attaching themselves to the hose, jumping off the side of the Nakatomi Plaza because they don't need anyone else, man. They're going to take down those terrorists themselves.
It's on my list, but I haven't caught up yet with the 80s films yet.
Oh, okay.
Cliffy, always a pleasure. I'll be in touch this week. We'll figure out. I know that you may be on vacation next week. We will talk about it.
I'm going to Disney, baby.
There it is, folks.
Be screaming and yelling. I will get you, me, Mickey Mouse. And we'll talk about whatever government subsidies that little suck-off mouse has been taking from us in taxes. And we'll beat his ass down. Okay,
right,
I'm really done now.
All right, well, I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Cliff.
Like you're ever having me back on the show now. Good talking to you, Sam.
Oh, yeah, it was nice knowing you, Cliff.
All right, bye.
Bye.
This show is subsidized by the Disney Corporation.
That's right. I'm getting all my... Wait till Cliff gets a load of those... yeah, I think you got to put your fingerprint. To get into Disney.
Yeah, yeah.
And they wanted to fingerprint my kid.
Are you serious?
I don't know if it was my kid. It was just like they want to make sure you have your own ticket. I remember that. I can't
How
remember.
How old was she when they would ask for her fingerprint?
No, I don't know if they asked for hers, but I was like, what the frick? So I used a, I was contemplating, like, should I put a tape on there? If we weren't with my father-in-law.
I used some other guy's finger. I just ripped it right off his.
If we weren't with my father-in-law. I would have done this because then I would have been able to
cut somebody else's finger off.
I would have. I would have like put the tape on my finger and just tried to mess with it, but it would have caused all sorts of problems. All right, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, political satirist and mayoral candidate for New York City, Randy Credico. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program political satirist, candidate for mayor in New York City. You can check out more at Credico2013.org. We got a link on Majority.fm. Randy Credico, welcome to the program, Randy.
Hey, it's great to be on, Sam, and congratulations on the awards and for the fine work you've been doing at Majority Reports.
Oh.
And when I see you on cable, too.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. Now, let me just say this. Usually in this segment, we have somebody come on to recommend a movie for me to watch online. We're not doing that this week because I'm going to recommend that people watch 60 Spins Around the Sun, which is a documentary that Laura Keitlinger, a friend of yours and an old friend of mine from back in the day, made about you. It's a great film, and we've linked to it. It's you can watch it on YouTube, and it gives a really good background of the work that you've been doing for years, activist work. But let's talk about – I want to talk about that. I want to talk about why you're running for mayor. You got 2% in the Democratic primary, which is actually – for people not in the know, that's an incredible amount of votes for somebody who doesn't have a war chest. I mean, Wiener got 4%.
Yes, Wiener doubled my amount. He had $5 million to spend, and whatever he got matching funds. I spent $22,000, and most of that was spent on hiring people to petition for the primary as a Democrat, and then in the general election with what's called the Tax Wall Street Party. So I'm running as an independent. But the fact that I got 2%, 2.2% actually, was really earth-shattering. Really was. I mean, people are still like trying to figure out how I did so well. Well, I had a pretty good base out there. People do know me. I've been involved in political activism in New York City for a long period of time, and just through social media, 2%. That's why they kept me out of a lot of the debates, because I did well in every single one of the debates that I was allowed to participate. And I also did very well in every one of the forums. In fact, these candidates did not want to follow me only because of my years as a stand-up performer, you know, as a stand-up working strip joints 30 years ago. All that stuff built up some tough skin. And, I was a lot more charismatic than, your typical Democratic machine politician.
Yeah, people don't know this, but you you were on Johnny Carson, the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, when you were, I think, in your late 20s. And if I remember correctly, you went on there. You did. You talked about U.S. foreign policy. You compared Ambassador Jane Kirkpatrick to Eva Braun. And as far as I know, that was the last time on the Tonight Show.
That was it for me. That include anything on NBC, even though Bob Morton liked me at the Letterman. I pretty much, but you know, what are you going to do? I was like, it was my moment in the sun there. In 1984, U.S. policy was at its very worst in Central America. And that's where by the way, you know, that had such a big effect on me. I spent a lot of time in Central America back in the 80s. And I actually met Bill de Blasio, who's the next mayor of New York City, down there. And I'm sure that had a big effect on him as well. It could not have had a big effect to be in that country that was the victim of U.S. foreign policy. In fact, I took a bunch of comedians down there, people you know, Jimmy Kingle, Barry Crimmins, and a few others down there, a kind of USO show, U.S. out show back in the 80s. But yeah, I did talk about U.S. policy on The Tonight Show, and that was, I did a lot of Reagan back then, and although it was good for my career. I am the Sandinista, by the way, in this race. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the next mayor, de Blasio, spending time there. But I did fundraisers with Ortega, and I did fundraisers with Nora Storger, the ambassador, hung out with Jane Fonda's kid Vanessa down there, went around and did comedy shows. So I'm proud of that era. It had a very big impact on my life.
Well, I mean, you keep referring to de Blasio as the next mayor. So what? Tell me, what do you see if you don't think you can beat him in the race? What do you see your role in this campaign?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. During the Democratic, before the primary, and during all the debates running up to it, de Blasio wanted me around because I was giving him a lot of cover. I was far left in this campaign. I was talking about not just taxing the rich, and the plan that he has will never pass Albany. I don't want to get into that, but I have a tax Wall Street plan that would be far more workable and would raise a lot more revenue. But the thing is, I was able, my rhetoric, and not really rhetoric, is how I believe, what I was saying at these debates, it gave him some cover, and he kept moving to the left, you know, the Tale of Two Cities and Stop and Frisk. He supported Stop and Frisk for 12 years as a council member and public advocate. But in the last couple of months, I had meetings with him. I talked to him. I said, you got to differentiate yourself from the other ones. I knew I couldn't win, but I didn't want the other two leading candidates or Wiener to win. So I had a non-aggression pact with him. Right now, what I can do is make sure that Bill Bratton is not the next police commissioner. I just spend the next 4 weeks attacking Bill Bratton for the kind of military rule he ran in Los Angeles. They're talking about bringing him back in to mollify the conservatives in this city. I don't think that's a good idea. And I will bring up some ideas here without slamming him, de Blasio, just some ideas. What we really need after 20 years of 8 years of Giuliani, which is thuggish rule, and 12 years of imperial rule by the mayor, emperor type of rule by the mayor, edicts. Now that that's over, people are dying for a Paris Commune kind of atmosphere here. Will de Blasio be able to deliver it? Probably not. You know what I mean? The real estate interests are too strong in this city. Real estate and Wall Street interests are too strong, and it's very difficult to go up against those huge forces.
You know, I love the idea that, you know, the interesting thing about what you've done in that race, and I think that, you know, I agree with you. I think, you know, de Blasio got a sense of which way the winds were blowing. And I think a lot of people seem to be surprised that the sort of the backlash against Christine Quinn for being such a Bloomberg enabler. And I think, you know, the foot dragging on the paid sick leave really, I think, sort of brought her positions into focus. And what she did with the St. Vincent's Hospital, I think, was another thing.
Taking money from the Rudin family and then, like, not trying to stop. I was out there every day at the St. Vincent's because I live in that neighborhood, you know, during the closing of that. And that, of course, really did kill. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but go ahead.
No, please, continue. Go, I mean, because...
Those things, now listen, he was kind of hanging around, and then what's his name parachuted in, Wiener, who, you know, and I said, don't attack Wiener on this stuff about his sex life. I don't care about that. The fact that he supported the war in Iraq and most of the Bush platform, NDAA, HR 347, the surge, all of these things he supported by Bush and the Patriot Act. And those are the reasons to go after him. And then, of course, he just imploded. But the thing is, de Blasio was at my side and heard the response I got at every one of the forums and debates he and I participated in, and he saw that they couldn't follow me. John Lewis says, I don't want to follow Credico. Sal Albanese, the same thing, that people liked what I was saying, and they picked up on it. So it did. I don't want to take credit for him winning this, but certainly he had to do something. And then he came out and he braced it like he was against stop and frisk from day one when he really was for it. For the last 11 years, we had a lot of arguments. I like the guy. He's an okay guy. I'm wishing him the best. This is what we're going to have. But getting into the race, I'm not really big on electoral politics, but getting into it and trying to move the debate to the left was my function. And I think that we succeeded. I had two ads in the Nation magazine who ironically ended up endorsing him over me.
Well, you know, but I mean, that dynamic, I think, is fascinating because, you know, there's always this sort of perception that individual contact with somebody, you know, I think it's underestimated. And I think, you know, the dynamic of him having to see the reaction that you are getting in these small forums around the city, that shapes his worldview. It gives him confidence to move to the left. Or, I mean, you know, however you want to look at it, you can look at it very cynically, like he just was, you know, cravenly moved to the left, or he gave him confidence because that's who he is. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. This is the persona that he is pursuing publicly. And I think that's, you know, that's an amazing takeaway from this is just that.
Well,
you...
listen.
Go.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, continue.
Well, listen, I think, like, let's say there was this deal up at this huge forum with Leonard Lopate and Kurt Anderson hosted up at the Teachers College at Columbia. There were 800 people there, 800. And, you know, I followed de Blasio and I got a standing ovation there. You know what I mean? I guess you can watch it on YouTube. It's there. And his performance, which he went on before me, I even gave him the shot. He came in with his son, Dante. He said, you go on first, you know. And then John Liu had to follow me. And the first thing he said was, I have the misfortune of following Randy Credico. So then I went out to Bay Terrace. The same thing happened there. And guess what? In Bay Terrace, the Jewish community there, at the Jewish Center there in Bay Terrace, I got 60% of the vote in that neighborhood. In a crowd of 800, I got up there. They were so, you know, half asleep, listening to 25 different politicians, and they saw me, and I did some of my comedy stick, and not just kind of my personality, along with my policy, and the people ate it up, you know, and we did the Gay Men Health Crisis Center together, de Blasio and I, and we always sat next to each other, but I had a non-aggression pact with him. He said to me after that one, he says, you're being too nice to Wiener. That's what he said to me. Wiener, that was the day Wiener imploded the Gay Men Health Crisis Center debate. He was over to my left, and de Blasio was on my right. And there's a nice picture of it that somebody sent, Credico and de Blasio playing footsies. So I didn't go after him. I wanted him to win the primary. I really wanted him to win the primary. And we met out in Brooklyn out there in Park Slope. We've talked on the phone. I communicate with him yesterday. But you know, right now I gotta keep him honest and he doesn't bring in Bill Bratton. But you know, the NYPD has a lot of control over this city. It's entrenched. It's got as much power. It's almost like a South American 60s style South American dictatorship, you know, that the military is always there in New York, NYPD. You have a commissioner here who's been there for 12 years. He's a J. Edgar Hoover times Fauché of France and Boccini of Italy in the 20s under Mussolini. He's that tight, keeping files and everyone. He knows it. De Blasio knows it. It's a very difficult road to hoe against this police department.
Do you think that there's is the way to a more just society sort of, is it going to be incremental in that respect? I mean, you know, the funny thing is you talk about a half a percentage point transaction tax on Wall Street, which, you know, in the context of you bringing it up in the mayoral race, it, you know, you talked about it as radical, but it's not a radical thing at all. I mean, it's a fairly mainstream concept, and would obviously bring in a tremendous amount of money as well as curbing the rampant speculation that creates bubbles and that creates financial crisis, et cetera.
Exactly. You hit the nail right on the head. Wall Street transaction tax within all of this super flash trading that's going on, and it would generate a lot of revenue. Now, Tom Harkin had a mild form of this, I believe, in the Senate, and Elizabeth Warren, I think, has something akin to it right now. I don't follow it as closely as you do, D.C., that much. I'm still focused on local politics right now. But, you know, I have Richard Wolff, who's a progressive economist, yep, who has been my assistant, on the advisor on this matter. And a Wall Street sales tax, you have to couple it with a national sales tax on Wall Street and then proportionally give it to the areas where the transactions are taking place. Just like in Alaska, everyone, Exxon gives, and all the other oil companies give money to the residents of the state of Alaska because that's where they're making all the revenue with the oil. So, and in gaming in Las Vegas, I suppose, works the same way, but it would be it would really help out this city instead of having these Mickey Mouse regressive tax schemes like cigarette taxes and scratch off games and ridiculously high prices for both the subway and for the bridges and tunnels in the city, parking violation fines and all. You know, there's so many regressive ways rather than a direct hit on Wall Street. And look how much money they have. Seriously. They got us into this jam. They have to get us out of this jam.
I agree with you on that. And so, I mean, why do you think de Blasio's plan to tax New Yorkers who make over $500,000 a year, presumably to earmarked for universal pre-K, you don't think that's going to get through Albany?
Well, first of all, just for universal pre-K, is that all we're looking for? You got 52,000 homeless people in New York City and 22,000 are children, 22,000 children. That's got to be the first thing. They're closing public libraries left and right. Just because you're run by a dictator doesn't mean that the trains run on time. Our subway system blows right now. So I think that I like the guy. I don't want to attack him. I don't want him to lose, right?
Right.
Unless I beat him. I don't want Loder to beat him. And he's got such a big lead, I can't imagine him losing, but there's going to be a lot of red baiting and a lot of mudslinging going on here, and anything can happen. I'm sure they're looking for ways to, you know, to destroy the guy. But the tax plan is specious because it requires, you know, Boss Tweed, one thing he did is he got us half of this city. We got New York City runs itself, but the other half, Albany runs. And when it comes to a tax, an income tax, it's up to Albany. You know, you just can't tax the rich locally. You can have a surcharge and things like that, but you just can't tax rich people. It takes an act of all. And Andrew Cuomo, who's the most conservative Democratic governor in the country right now. Everyone thinks he's a liberal or progressive. He is not. I've known him for a long period of time. And he is not going to raise taxes on the rich, no more than he's going to pass medical marijuana in the city when he gets money bundled from Al D'Amato and other lobbyists, you know, for the Committee to Save New York and from the pharmaceutical companies. That's not happening. So he's not that progressive, and he's a control freak. De Blasio is much more charismatic, and this is going to drive Cuomo crazy. Once he gets the job, he's going to be the voice of the state of New York and the city of New York. And I genuinely think that, you know, he owes it to those people that responded to the ads. He came out of the pack when he moved to the left.
Yeah.
And so people are buying that. People are buying that. And no one's screaming, by the way, no rich people are screaming right now about De Blasio and this millionaire's tax because they know it's not going to pass. So nobody's complaining. A progressive real estate tax would be good too. You know, the Yankees don't pay taxes. The Barclays Center doesn't pay taxes because they got this loophole called 421A that they're able to get tax breaks, abatements, and everything else, even MSG, as long as they promise to sign a paper saying that they're going to build some affordable housing, 421A. Well, the Yankees still haven't done that. The Barclays Center hasn't done that, and there's always a way out of it. But in the meantime, people's real estate taxes that make $80,000, $100,000, $200,000 condo are way, you know, out of line.
Yep.
compared to what rich people pay. That's why there's a guy with a $90 million apartment here on 57 West. He pays what the guy who has an $800,000 apartment pays because it's under that 421A bill.
Hmm. All right. Well, give me your thoughts on Joe Lahota. Apparently, it's come out today that De Blasio has a 50-point lead over Lahota, according to the CBS poll.
Well, so did the Jets. I mean, so did the Baltimore Colts against the Jets.
Right.
And so things can happen here, you know. But Garibaldi liberated Sicily with 1,000 men against 25,000 Bourbon troops. Anything could happen. And I'll tell you, the problem with Lahota is Lahota's just not a good public speaker. He has no charisma. He's got some good ideas. His idea of legalized marijuana, which, of course, once again, it's up to the state legislature to do that and signed by the governor, has no tax plan. And, you know, he smokes cigars. And he's got a good sense of humor. I did a debate with him and a couple of others, and I had him on the floor laughing. You know, so he's a likable guy one-on-one. And he's better than Senator McConnell, and he's better than Senator D'Amato when he was a senator. I mean, he's better on some things, but I don't see how he can really close the gap, the 50 points. But I don't believe the 50 point. I don't believe it. Just like, you know, I was polling at less than 0.5%. I got 2.2%. Wiener was polling at 10, ended up with 4. John Lewis ended up with 7. Huh?
You got to take the polls with a grain of salt.
They don't do the polls. There's a lot of push polling going on, and there's 13 candidates in this race, and they're not asking about other candidates. There's 5 weeks left right now, and you know that guy in Italy, that guy Beppe Grippo, political satirist, came out of nowhere and was in the top three vote getters, his party. So he and I don't have the same politics, but, you know, anything could happen, between now and November 5th, just like De Blasio. Remember, just 2 or 3 weeks before, he was at 9%, and then he got 40%, you know.
I just want to get your take too. I mean, I've heard you say that, that stop and frisk is really, just symptomatic of a larger problem with the police department in this city. Give me your take on that.
Yeah, sorry. I'll stop because I've been against since 1999. I ran the William Kunstler Fund for Racial Justice actually since 1997 that we were involved, as that documentary will show, with fighting against the drug laws in New York and around the country, including in Texas, Tulsa, Texas. We had a program. We organized people from the black community to videotape, cops in action. I was taking pictures myself of these stops and frisks. So that's the front line. It's the first line of the mass incarceration scheme that's going on right now, the prison industrial complex. I hate to use that kind of rhetoric, but it really is true. New York State has 61,000 prisoners, I believe, right now. There was 10,000 when Attica exploded. There are three ways to get people into the prison. First, you stop and frisk. Then you get them on drug charges. And then you get them before a judge. That's an ex-DA. And you got a DA that all he wants to do is win. They never give exculpatory material over to the defense attorneys. It's not Law and Order. You look at Law and Order, and my buddy Richard Belzer, I'm sorry that he's a propagandist. There's the Lenny Wiesenthal of the New York Police Department. No, I'm kidding. But you know, it's just that. It's a stop and frisk, just one element. It's the criminal justice system is such a scam, and there's so much money involved in it. You know, you got cops who make money, you got prosecutors who make money, defense attorneys who make money, you got judges who get retirement pay when it's over, you got assistant DAs, you got the guys who drive the buses, you got Likers, there's so many elements too. And you know, I'll tell you an example of how bad it's really gotten. When Obama was when he was sworn in in 2009, January, there was a stock called CWX, Correctional Association of America. They build private and manage private prisons for the feds and for some states. Their stock was going at $8 a share then. You know where it is right now? Almost $40 a share the last time I looked.
Mm.
So there's a lot of money on the private level there, but there's also a lot of repression and a lot of money.
You got to fill those beds, right? I mean, if you're building these prisons, you got to fill those beds. There's a great series that people should check out that The Nation has done in conjunction with Brave New Films on the private prison industry complex. A series of videos. We'll put a link to that as well.
The problem is that's on a national level, but there's none in New York State. They're banned. We still got 60,000. Mario Cuomo built 37 of our 70 prisons. Wow. Andrews, who delivered that Tale of Two Cities speech back in 1984, I believe, and Mondale was the nominee, if you remember.
Yep.
So you got the ugly tentacles of this prison industrial complex on every level. It's just, it's difficult. It's a beast. It's like, you know, the military industrial complex. You know, we have the same thing going right now, and the drug war is what really fuels it.
Randy, let me ask you, I mean, just talk to me a little bit about your move from being a comedian to becoming an activist. I mean, obviously, I've seen 60 Spins Around the Sun, and I know the story you tell about it in that film, but I'm just curious about your transition, because obviously on some level, I mean, I'm not the activist that you are, on some level, I'm still, I guess, arguably an entertainer, but I'm curious about just sort of that journey for you, and also, you know, how you seem to be very good at both having very specific and passionate beliefs of where the society has to move to, but also be able to look and see that it is an incredibly tough road, row to hoe. It's a big mountain to climb. How do you maintain that attitude?
It's very difficult. You know, it really propelled me into this. And first of all, when I first met you, I was at a party where Larry David was at, I think, and Mike Rope, 20 years ago, I think. You were doing stand-up then, and then next I know you, you're doing political. It was an amazing transition that you've made, all right? So I congratulate you on making that transition yourself. So you do what you can do. You know, it's very despairing. It's very disquieting and mentally disquieting to be involved in prison work. You know, you can burn out real easy. There's a priest up there, one of these liberation theologians upstate that used to visit the prisoners at in the special housing units. You know, basically, you know, you're in isolation in a hole underground for months at a time. And so he would go in and visit. He finally had a heart attack and had to quit because there's only so much we can take. You know, Che Guevara was able to go to Leprosarians and, his parish priest that I could do just about anything but that. And that's something I couldn't do. You know, so there's certain things I can't do. My father did 10 years in prison before I was born. It had a huge impact on all of the kids and the family before I was born. It had a big, huge impact on him. It's in the documentary. But I know, you know, that it's hell. Prison is hell. It's only supposed to be for the Hannibal Lecters of this world. It's not supposed to be for people like me, because I smoke pot. I shouldn't be in prison, and neither should anybody else who smokes pot or does whatever they want to do with their body. But, you know, you got a lot of people in prison there for 10, 15 years. There are no brewmakers out there trying to help you out. And, you know, it's a terrible experience. And people, I deal with prisoners all the time, and every single one of them is whacked out. And that's what really ultimately psychologically drove me into this work, was somehow trying to reconcile my father's time in prison. Mm-hmm. And I did comedy for a long period of time. I did political humor. It was Bill Kunstler, who I met in 1985 or 86 by happenstance. I was, running around with Joey Heatherton, who had some legal problems. And I looked up Kunstler, and Kunstler had a huge impact on me. I ran his organization in 97 after he died. I ended up, after I did a Belzer documentary, not documentary, his show, Another Little Nut on HBO. But during that taping and afterwards, I was really dipping into the white powder a lot. And I got sober off of that, experience. And I ran across a guy who had just gotten out of prison who did the same thing. You know what I mean? Who just did 12 years in prison for what I did, which was like for doing the cocaine. And so I met the guy, and he's an internationally known get out of prison painter. And I started organizing families of prisoners based off the model of the Madre de Plaza de Mayo in Argentina, who actually came up to New York City. I brought four of the mothers from Argentina that were out there day after day after day after day to get rid of that, the dirty war administration of Videla, the U.S.-sponsored coup that took place there. And these women that were out there every day, they inspired me and my group called Mothers of the New York Disappeared. And, you know, it does wear on you. It's hard to maintain your sense of humor and your enthusiasm. I can't go by a courtroom right now, because I can't stand watching young black kids come in chains every single day, and nobody, couples of people that are coming in for jumping over a turnstile. I can't handle it. I'm burnt out on it. So that's why I'm running for office, kind of running away from that, getting a breather from it, and maybe I can get back to it.
Randy Credico, the site is Credico. Number 2013.org. We got a link to that. We also have a link to 60 Spins Around the Sun. People should check it out. It's a great film, and I really appreciate the work you're doing, Randy, and good luck.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, and I must say I want a shout out to the work that you've done, because I've seen you on filling in on Current TV and MSNBC. And you've done a super job, a great job, and we need more people like you who have the gift of gab to get out of comedy, make the sacrifice, and go out there and blow the horn for justice.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Randy Credico. All right, folks. Thanks, Randy.
Thank you.
All right, folks. I guess
you got to start telling people that way. Yeah, I left comedy. I made the sacrifice for. I love the way you put that.
Well, I mean, I never perceived it that way, but I don't know that I've made the work Randy does. I mean, watch the film. I mean, Randy has been tireless in involved in activism. In many respects, aside from just sitting in a smelly room with you two guys, I haven't sacrificed very much.
Buddy,
what's that?
Sacrifice is all here, buddy.
Oh yeah, listen, Michael. Michael could have very well been. You could still be living large up in Western Massachusetts right now. You could. all right. Well, I guess this is going to be a freebie Friday because
sure.
Let's
bring it to those two pieces of sound.
Oh yeah. Well, let's sure. Cliff had mentioned this in our conversation. But as you know, you have 800,000 people around the country now, federal workers, National Guardsmen. You have people who work at the IRS, people who work for the EPA, people who work at state parks, people who work in all sorts of walks of life who are going without pay. They're not going to get back pay. More than likely, they won't. They've already gone now 5 days, 1 week without pay. These are not people who are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. These are not people who have big savings accounts. They may not see this cash. They may not be able to make rent this month. And this is after 1 week. We'll see what happens in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And that's also not to mention the women who can't get subsidies for their infant formula. This is not to mention the kids who are without Head Start, whose parents now have to pay for daycare or figure out a way that they can go to work. I mean, this ripples throughout. Scientists laid off. And here is Congresswoman Renee Elmers talking to a radio station in Raleigh, North Carolina. She is a tried and true Tea Party American who also happens to be a congresswoman. I've actually was on, I think, Chris Hayes with her, or followed her on Chris Hayes after her. Just unbelievable. And here is why. Now, as you know, I think it's the 27th Amendment that says that Congress cannot change its pay for itself. Can only do it for future Congresses. So there are some congresspeople who are saying we're not going to take pay while other people are not getting their money. And look at how much of a sacrifice it would be for her.
I need my paycheck. That's the bottom line. And I understand that maybe there are some other members who are, you know, deferring their paychecks, and I think that's admirable. I'm not in that position.
I don't.
Yeah. She's not in that position. But the 800,000 people that have been furloughed and the 1.3 million, including the Capitol policemen who are still working, are not getting any checks either. So at least she can understand the concept, but she's not going to act on it.
Her husband is also a medical surgeon with his own practice.
Oh, she must be really struggling. Well, of course, Obamacare has made her husband broke overnight. Unbelievable. And speaking of unbelievable, you'll recall that the governor of the great state of Pennsylvania, Governor Corbett, Tom Corbett, has said some pretty impressive things, like the reason why people can't find jobs around this state is because they're all on drugs. It's impossible to find somebody to hire who isn't on drugs.
And he would hire a Hispanic if he could find one.
Yes, he had trouble finding Hispanics to hire for his cabinet. Apparently he couldn't find any, because then none of them wanted to move to the Capitol. That was what his experience was.
They wouldn't make the commute.
They wouldn't make the commute. Well, here he is again. And this is pretty stunning. We have the audio. You got to check out the video here, because he's being interviewed by an anchor on WHP-TV in Harrisburg. She is so shocked at what he's about to say that she doesn't even know how to respond. And here it is. Governor Corbett, given the opportunity, essentially, to walk back some incredibly offensive statements his aides have made in reference to marriage equality. And here he is.
Same-sex marriage continues to be a hot-button issue here in Pennsylvania. I spoke with Governor Corbett about it when he stopped by our CBS 21 studio. Gay marriage, that's a big topic that's going on right now, continues to be in the news. And we already touched upon, there was a controversial remark made by a member of your legal team comparing gay marriage to the union of 12-year-olds, saying both are illegal, which you called inappropriate.
It was an inappropriate analogy. You know, I think a much better analogy would have been brother and sister, don't you?
I don't know.
Well, we
know. I don't know. I'm gonna leave the comments to you and your team, but you did say it was inappropriate, and you have a better phrasing that you think, but.
Are you kidding me?
What are you talking about?
This guy, you know, you're right. What my aide said was very offensive. Let's see if I can top that. That poor, poor anchor. She was just, she was stunned.
Gay marriage is like pedophilia? Pfft, no, it's more like incest.
Yeah.
I love how he's like, wouldn't you say? And she was like, I'm actually not going to say anything except for, no, that is not what I would say.
I am already thinking about how in the edit I can actually be edited out of this clip.
It would have been great if she just got up and, like, shimmied off.
You'll excuse me while I don't taint my reputation from actually being in the same room with you. Congratulations, Pennsylvania, on your governor. Let's go to the IMs, Bush and Chains. Obama's BS false flag chemical attack in Syria continues to be exposed. Saudi black op team behind the Damascus chem weapons attack. Diplomatic sources. Max Blumenthal and Democracy Now! Goliath, Lithan, Loving, and Greater Israel. We'll have Max on soon. Bad New Yorkers, you only have 4 years left to live. Yahweh told me so. Ian Longsdoggin. Congress gets paid because their pay is apportioned by the Constitution as separate law. This budget is exclusively for discretionary spending, so it doesn't cover Congress at all. Couldn't believe my smarmy douchebaggery from a Heartland rep. I can't believe the segments Chris did on how serious the shutdown is, that he still tried to pull out Americans don't like bureaucrats. You know, that dude Dominich said the bureaucrats thing too, and I almost jumped out of my seat. And unfortunately, that was at the end of the segment, but I was just like, I found it enraging. Enraging. And, you know, like, even if you're not talking about National Guard, even if you're not talking about park rangers, you know, the people who work, even at the hated IRS, they are making our country function. They are working there despite knowing that this is a job that isn't going to be particularly glamorous, that we're living in an era when people who work for the government are slagged by 45% of the population because some fat OxyContin addict tells them to. Or skinny OxyContin. It doesn't matter what its girth is. And they do this to work in environments that aren't necessarily the best case environments to work for. And they do it partially, I imagine, because of they like the idea that they're working for the government and helping people. And frankly, they're also doing it because there should be some measure of job security to make up for the fact that you're working in such a non-glamorous situation and a decent pension. And I got news for you. That's why most people work. And so you take this away from people, and frankly, you're driving good people out of these jobs, and you're giving them no respect. And I got news for you. First, they come for the government workers. First, they get rid of the government workers' pensions. They get rid of their job security. And then they come from yours. This just sets the precedent. The reason why they hate government workers, the reason why they hate the fact that they get a decent pension and some job security, is because they don't want to give it to you in the private sector. They don't want an example out there of people making a middle-class living and being secure in their retirement. That's the bottom line. Matt Maher, libertarian caller yesterday, saying government shouldn't be allowed to borrow money, should ask himself, how is it that the founding fathers borrowed money from the French and Dutch bankers to finance the revolution? There wouldn't be something called the United States had it not been for borrowed money and debt. And frankly, look, you know, the ability to print money and the ability to borrow money is also what gets us out of bad economic times. Recessions and depressions were, in many respects, more severe when the government didn't have the ability to print money or to borrow money so they could spend more and juice the economy. Greta Dog. Sam Hayes defaulted to the standard position of analyzing the politics and optics as opposed to the pain this is actually inflicting on real people. Chris needs to stay away from Chuck Todd. My mother-in-law is right, a right-wing Republican who was saved three times by Medicare, but she but was sure her 25-month supplement insurance payment was covering the near $1 million in care that she received. She, in her mind, was paying her way and still believes that to her this day. Milton Apathy, 27th. No law varying the compensation of services the senators and representatives shall take effect until the election. Yes, okay. Sam, I agree Obama was very delicate on the first debt ceiling hijacking in 2011. Have faith. He won't fold on this. Going with the Ryan budget was BS. Dude, what is up with these BS emails and Facebook posts from people saying they have gotten quotes that were so high when they declined coverage they are threatened with house liens for the fines? That is a total lie.
You mean email threads and spam stuff like that is not
real? I got news for you.
Real?
The only penalty that you would be subjected to this year, the maximum penalty would be $95 off of your tax rebate. Period. The government has no way to enforce this action other than that. And then after that, it's 1%, I think, of your, is it 1%? I don't know. It goes up incrementally through the years. The idea that they could be liens or anything, absolutely, 100%, fundamental, total lie. Total lie. It is the right wing trying to dissuade people from getting health care. They will not. These people who believe in the free market of ideas, they will not allow people even, they're scaring people from going and trying it out. If it fails, let it fail on its own accord. It's unbelievably despicable and totally unsurprising. Send me those Facebook posts and those emails. Send them to me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Maybe I'll bring that bullshit out of the woodwork for this. The shutdown's affecting us here in Puerto Rico. Over 10,000 federal employees can't go to work. All our national parks are closed, hurting a major source of income for the island. Government programs like WIC are affected. 600 to 800 workers in the National Guard of Puerto Rico can't work either. It sucks to take from a Congress that we are not allowed to vote into office. Indeed. T-Bet's got a superb 4G signal here, and the app's audio stream keeps dying. Had to switch to the TuneIn app. Seems to be a problem with the app, not the stream. Rock solid on the TuneIn player. Kyle, did you hear that? Sorry, I don't know why that happens. I'll have Kyle look into it. What kind of, what is your iOS? Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com and give us all your deets, if you don't mind. That means details. If you're not a hipster like myself. Triangle Bill, Sam, can you comment on the apparently massive media by the No Labels group? They've been running these ridiculous ceasefire ads, which seems like the ultimate he said, she said, both sides do it. They feature John Huntsman and Evan Bay. Ugh. Umars, could the savings, I'll look into it, the savings security Obamacare effectively serve as a kind of economic stimulus? It's going to take a while. You've never seen Die Hard? I have. I was joking. A Square, Sam, and the mainstream media will not debunk or use facts because this shutdown is a ratings and advertising bonanza. So thanks for catapulting the propaganda last night on Chris's show. The Republicans will message hard on this. The people don't care about bureaucrats not getting paid, blah, blah. But the storm is getting stronger as the states heavily depend on the federal government for local services. We thought this was a circus with Gingrich in the 90s, but this time around the theater of the absurd and the end goal is to continue to tear apart the social compact. Left Coast Marcus, did I hear Randy Credico correctly? There are 22,000 homeless children in New York. This app is awesome, by the way. And what does Michael have to worry about? He's getting Reza Aslan money right now. Did he say 22,000 were children, or there was a figure of the 22,000? You have to go back and listen.
We can go back and listen, but to be honest with you, the 22,000 number of children in New York wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about the amount of families that have gone up in the last couple of years, it's terrible.
The conversation with Randy Credico was interesting, Sam. The Italian comedian politician he kept quoting, his name is Beppe Grillo, and he's really an asshole. Your friend has nothing in common with him other than being a comedian that's also in politics. Grillo is a fascistoid corporate shill in libertarian clothes.
Grillo seems kind of almost just like a comedic asshole version of like the No Labels group.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Credico is obviously a real progressive.
Bad. Incredible interview with Randy Credico. He's got my vote. JFKDD, they're always talking about how evil the neo-communist Chinese government is with suppressing its people. Well, why does the U.S. have more people in prison than a country with over a billion people? Good point. Oh, there's money in them prisoners.
To be fair, they don't. We don't shoot people, then send people charges for the bullets.
I also imagine we probably also have better records keeping.
Probably.
Hi, Sam. Kudos for having Reddit Critico on the show. He's one of the few mayoral candidates who is on our side to protect New York City libraries. Please ask him about the nefarious plans that are afoot. Sorry, I didn't get that till late. Why does Chris Hayes, Jay Tingle, have someone like homeschooled Patrick Henry University plagiarist like Dominich on his show, even a ridicule? With all respect to Michael Brooks. Did you read Journey into a Libertarian Future at Naked Capitalism? I didn't. Send me that email. I use ISO 7. I had to switch from the app to the browser to get the stream today. Interesting. We'll look at the logs. Ronald Reagan, can't believe your crew's silent non-response to the Jeremiah Johnson reference. My movie recommendation, Jeremiah Johnson. P.S. According to Republican dogma, these non-contributing public workers can finally go find real jobs in the private sector. Tom Fratman, what do you think the future prospects for American jobs? Do you ever think about what the new standard will be for a wage? Time gets more desperate. Won't salaries decrease to take advantage of our economic woes? Indeed. Dez222, what happens when you destroy budgets? I know seven people who have quit teaching in Philadelphia or quit their government jobs due to insecurity. That's real insecurity, not what Wall Street bankers claim they face. Postman, new documents show Michelle Bachmann bribed Iowa state legislator and then was outbribed by Ron Paul. That's the free market, folks. Scott Ricketts, please tell me you saw Alex Jones' performance art piece with the Gorn mask from Star Trek. I did. I didn't know what to make of it. Sam, don't you know that Austro unicorn economics solves the business cycle and would make recessions extinct? D. William, I had the same dropouts when trying to watch the video from my Android phone. Audio stream is fine. Weird. MR Dr. Face, can we organize homeless to march? I don't know. I imagine there's been attempts. I mean, it's hard to do. On iOS 7 with laggy net, but stream solid on app. Weird. All right, the final IM will go to... Jay Tingle. No, Michael, hardworking families have to pay for those bullets. Seriously, why does Hayes have Dominich on his show? I don't know. I do not know. See you Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light's shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made. The option where you don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah.